Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening.
And this week, Fee and I are in conversation with Lisa Armstrong.
Lisa, you're the Telegraph's head of fashion. You've also written for all kinds of other publications, including, of course, the fashion Bible, Vogue. Plus, you've written four novels, which I didn't know until we got into researching for today. So just to start with, I'd love to know, how do you stay organized? Because you're always traveling here, there and everywhere and juggling so many balls. And do you feel as though you've cracked the work-life balance thing yet?
I mean, this is a hilarious question. My family would subside into hysterical but sad laughter. The truth is, I am not fundamentally an organized person. And in an ideal world, I'd have a PA. And I think the problem is that as a young girl, I didn't want to be organized. I just wanted to float through the countryside reading novels. So I haven't cracked that, but I am working on it. The work-life balance, I think you have to accept that it ebbs and flows, and there are times when it's actually okay, for me anyway. I'm very fortunate that I can work from home quite a lot and work from home very productively. I always have done throughout my career, because as a writer, you need quiet. You just need quiet, or I do. I can't even have music on, actually, as too distracting. And you need to shut out the outside world for a bit. And the great thing about being a writer is that you've got something to show at the end of the day. So if people say, oh, why are you working at home? It's not very productive. You say, well, actually, here are 2,000 words. So I definitely haven't cracked the organization, but I'm definitely working on it. Getting tips from my elder daughter, who tells me I was OCD, but I didn't know I was OCD because no one knew about OCD then. She's ADD. But then I think, sorry, I'm a little bit skeptical about this. If she's ADD, I'm ADD. I don't know anyone who isn't ADD. But anyway, she's giving me all these techniques to deal with she is very organized. But to deal with my lack of organization, a lot of it actually is very simple, like just writing things down.
Good old to-do list, yeah.
To-do list is amazing. I mean, it's so obvious, isn't it? But we don't do it. And I think last thing at night, it really helps you sleep, actually, if you write everything, not journaling, but just writing what you need to do. Mm. Everything. I mean, I did quite minor things as well, like buy more fertilizer or something, because then you feel so great when you can tick it off.
Yeah.
Oh. I drink lots of water before lunchtime, my new thing.
I write everything down. Hello, Lisa. This is quite a soul-searching question reasonably early on, but we loved an answer you gave in another interview when you were asked what advice you'd give to midlife women losing their confidence and feeling invisible. And you said, find someone to flirt with, even if it's your partner. That's such a great response. What's your experience been like as a midlife woman in terms of finding and maintaining self-confidence, if you ever lost it?
I think I've gained it, actually. I don't think I was very confident when I was younger. I think, do you know what? Maybe this isn't the most practical tip, but go to Paris. Because in Paris, they really... Sorry, I don't want to fall into all those cliches, Emily in Paris cliches. But in Paris, they do appreciate a midlife woman or a 90-year-old woman. And they'll tell you. And so that's nice. On a very personal front, which is this is very niche, I had to start doing these pictures for my columns in the Telegraph, which were very uncomfortable making. Because when I first started as a journalist, you were absolutely told to keep yourself out of the story. I mean, you weren't even allowed to write ever in the first person. Mm. It wasn't about you. And now here I am twirling in front of a camera and feeling a bit of a twit quite a lot of the time. But I've learned so much. So obviously not everyone has a column. That is a really not a good piece of advice. But I do think that having seeing ourselves in full length pictures all the time, once you get over the initial horror, it's quite useful. If you can do it without getting obsessed or hung up with your perceived flaws, you learn a lot about what looks good on you. And I think really also use clothes to make you look good, not the other way around. There's no reason for you to force yourself into any specific trend. You know, that's not what clothes are for. It's not about you conforming to some mad idea of what a woman's body should be like. It's about finding the clothes that work for you.
Completely agree.
Good.
Staying with the big questions, we also saw an article you wrote with the brilliant headline, "The only reason Hollywood accepts women over 50 is because they all look under 40. I loved this article.
Good.
We've had a few conversations on this podcast around a celebrity's right to privacy versus how nice it would be if more women were transparent about any work that they might have done. What are your thoughts on all of this now?
I think it's really difficult because I think there's still a lot of judgment around having work done in certain quarters, and it's somehow seen as cheating. So I totally understand why actresses and actors don't want to do all that. And I also think they are in an environment, a lot of them, if you work in Hollywood, you are expected to look a certain way. But what the thing that I take issue with is when they go out of their way to say, I haven't had anything done. Oh, it's down to drinking lots of water and getting lots of sleep. And that's annoying because we can all see. We've all got eyes. We know what's available now. And I just think you've absolutely got a right to have anything you want done and not to talk about it, but just don't say anything.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I think that's where we landed as well. We want to get into some fashion chat, obviously, but firstly, just to get an idea on how you're aging well, what is your current morning routine in terms of nutrition, exercise, wearables, trackables, any supplements, basically the list of what you do?
Oh, gosh. This might be really, really boring, but I'll try and make this sort of helpful if I can. I've just, after 30 years of not sleeping properly, I'm sleeping properly. It's a game changer. The supplement that I swear by, and Sophie knows this because when I was seeing her the other day, I said, oh, you're probably going to poo-poo this, but this is changing my life. And it's Nuchido Plus. Is it called Nuchido Plus, Sophie?
Nuchido Time Plus. But
oh,
yeah.
Time Plus. And it resets, well, you'll be able to explain this better than I can, but it resets your NAD, which basically organizes, that's not the right word, but it's your circadian rhythm. And it's also to do with the energy and the energy that your cells are reproducing. And I don't advertise, I'm not sponsored by them. And I'm very skeptical about a lot of supplements simply because I've tried lots and they've not really made a perceptible difference. It is a total game changer. But you can't take it on an empty stomach. So actually, probably I don't do that first thing in the morning, but I think I really want people to know about it because it's helped me a lot. So what I do is I get up. No, I don't get up. I wait for my husband to bring me coffee. No, I do get up. I do get up now because I've just started doing the human being diet.
Oh, what's that?
Or is it the human body diet? Oh, my gosh. It's become cold. I then found out that 4 other people in our tiny little fashion and beauty department were also doing it. We're all at different phases. And the Telegraph's written about it a lot. You can download the books. But it's by a nutritionist called Petronella Ravens.
Oh, yeah.
And I think essentially what it is, just in a nutshell, you're cutting out all gluten, all sugar, all dairy. That you do 2 days of just eating vegetables. Then you go on to the second phase, which is protein and vegetables in equal measure, no oil. So cooking is, you have to find a different way of cooking. It's actually really easy. And that's the phase I'm in. And then you go on to phase 3, which is introducing new things. Long story short, I mean, I've only been doing it 4 days, so who am I to proselytize? But already, I do feel so much more energy. One of the very simple things in this is she wants you to drink loads and loads of water. We all know that, but I always thought, oh, it's just ridiculous. But I'm now drinking tons of water first thing to get it over and done with, and so that I'm not going to the loo like 5 times at night. And it just gives you so much more energy. I never wanted to be one of those people who was gluten intolerant. And I was told I was gluten intolerant years ago by a nutritionist, and I didn't really take her advice. But I think I probably am. Anyway, it's helping hugely. And everybody in my little department who's on it, we're all at different phases and we're all doing it for different reasons and all finding it really quite incredibly eye-opening and helpful. I do half an hour of exercise, but not cardio. I don't like cardio. Sorry, I'm just over it. Or I'll go to a Pilates studio and do proper Pilates and do a bit of skin brushing, but on my face. I should do it on my body, but I do it on my face, put my unguents on, and then take my dog for a walk, which is really, for me, the most joyful thing. I mean, I've tried meditation, and I found it really hard, and I can't still my mind, but I do think walking in a park is quite meditative, hearing birdsong. And also, I quite often meet up with friends on the walks or with PRs. I'll do walk and talks, and it's just great.
Sophie, you're a good pal with Nutrido's founder, aren't you, Nicola? We interviewed Nicola too, didn't we?
Yeah, Nicola's amazing. She's a good friend. We became friends after I discovered her product.
She's very impressive. She's young, isn't she? She's about 37, I think.
37, and
yeah. Yeah.
Can we talk to you about beauty and skincare? Are there any products you're brand loyal to? Are you into treatments or tweakments?
Well, and you know I'm into treatments.
I know. I mean,
I'm going to be really honest.
Confidentiality.
On the basis of what I've just said, I do love a bit of Botox with a Dr. Schotter, but a tiny little bit. I was just talking about this to a friend who's so much younger than I am this morning on our walk and talk, and I love a little bit of help. If it's there, why not? But I think there are two schools of aesthetics these days. There's the I look done and I like this look aesthetic, and then there's the me's of this world who also like a bit of help, but we don't want to look as though we've had any. So I do a bit of Botox, but I do loads of facial massage. I do facial exercise. I don't know if Sophie thinks they do anything, but I've just found this website that I've joined, actually paid good money for it. And I think it's really, the exercises are really good. And products, I like to use organic products. And there's a facialist who just does facial, not just, she does her facials, a facial massage. And she makes all her own organic products, and she trained as a biochemist. So she also really knows about the science. And that's Alexandra Sovereign. So that's it.
Mm.
It's pretty low maintenance. I do put an SPF on.
It's pretty streamlined.
What else? I do gua sha. Oh, so I do my 30 minutes of my bar or whatever. And I do then do 5 minutes of the facial exercises.
Interesting.
So I know it sounds really indulgent, because I think, especially when you've got young children, you're just rushing around in the morning. And I don't really know what the answer is, because I didn't do any of this when my kids were little.
I think it's intriguing because you must have access to so many amazing products. We talked to a few people working in media, and of course you get sent lots of things. And so it's really interesting that actually, you know, you're not throwing loads and loads in your face. You're getting your tweakments, but you're keeping it pretty simple.
I mean, I do try and try out the products, but when I started, I thought I'm going to try everything out for 6 weeks. But you just can't do that, because you're literally being sent dozens of scores, and I don't even get everything because I'm not a full-time beauty. I mean, my day job is fashion, but now I'm more experienced. I read the science or pseudoscience behind products. I'll obviously put them on my hand. If I really like the look of them, then I'll take them home. I do try them out, but not, I can't try everything out. Also, I've learned, I like things to be as, I was going to say non-toxic, but I know Sophie's probably rolling her eyes at this point. There's this app called Yuka, which I know lots of people already have, but you can look up everything from household cleaning products to food to beauty products, and it will tell you how toxic it is. And I love that. And also it's quite surprising, because there are some big fashion designer brands that I would have thought would not be very good, and they turn out to be pretty fine, and then others that aren't. Anyway, it's just, I like that app, but take it with a pinch of salt.
Moving on to fashion, what are your feelings around so many of us now buying online and not actually heading into a shop and trying things on?
Well, again, I can be really preachy, because I live in London and there's access to lots of shops. But it's very easy. If you don't live near good shops, then of course you're going to buy online. And God knows I've bought loads online in the past. But I just do really now, I'm mourning the demise of some stores, because I think buying online, we all know wine o'clock. You've had that glass of wine and you're trigger happy, or you're bored, or you're depressed, or you've just got what I think the Americans call the shoppies, and all these and just buying stuff. And okay, some sites make it pretty easy to return. But I mean, I've bought from those sites and they tend to be the pricier ones. And even then you think, I can't be bothered. I'll just keep it. It's quite nice. I'll keep it. And it's the quite nice that I think is a bit dangerous. So I would love to encourage people to get back into shops more. You know, my dirty secret is I don't actually enjoy shopping.
Same.
Me neither.
I'd really put a lid on my clothes spending for a year and a half, because we're building a house and that's where a lot of, more than all our money was going. But a few weeks ago, I thought, I need some clothes. And I went into Totem and they got a shop on Mount Street and the assistant was so amazing. And I spent ages in there and she brought me out all the stuff from the back. And it felt really thoughtful, because I didn't buy that much, but the pieces I bought, I just absolutely love. And I thought, I'd never have got these pieces online. I wouldn't have chosen these pieces online.
Yeah, absolutely. If I was very wealthy, I'd love to have a personal stylist, but then you've got to trust them enough to know that they know your taste. But yeah, also another one here that doesn't enjoy shopping. So that's
it'd be lovely to have a personal stylist. There are now some apps that can help you. There's one called ThinkShape, where you upload very detailed your statistics, your measurements, like very detailed. And then it tells you everything, like from you've got quite small boned, or you're medium boned, or you've got a long neck, or you've got your waist to leg ratio, your torso run. And it's incredibly helpful. And then it will link you through to the shapes and the shops with those specific items in now that will suit you.
Yeah. Oh, great tip.
We've been talking to a few founders recently. I also wondered what you think about brands such as Her and this idea of renting dresses and borrowing fashion rather than buying it.
Oh, it's fantastic in theory. I think they're great, but I also not sure that they are ultimately the answer, because the problem is all those returns, the couriers, the dry cleaning, I'm not sure. My younger daughter uses them. I think probably they'd be fantastic for big occasions, like going to a wedding or whatever, because, you know, why spend a lot of money on something you might just wear once? I'm not sure about doing it, because I know you can get monthly subscriptions where, you know, you're wearing rented clothes to the office. I would find that a bit fiddly. I actually like to wear in my clothes. But I think the hats off, we have to think of new ways to tackle our addiction to fast fashion.
Yeah.
And I think the circular economy where I love shopping vintage and looking at that. Those are websites. But yes, I really like that. I like looking at the posh websites and seeing, because the thing is, buying clothes is like buying a car. The minute you get it out of the shop, it's devalued.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. You've preempted my next question, which is, with the cost of living crisis, are there any fashion brands that you think combine quality with financial accessibility? And it seems that you are a charity shop fan from what you've said a moment ago. So can you let us in on where you go? Any tips on the charity shop score as well?
Okay. A big tip. This is a plug alert. Every year, the Telegraph teams up with Smartworks, the charity that helps women back into work if they've been out of the workplace for whatever reason. It could be illness, drugs, just long maternity, looking after kids. Women who just are struggling to find their confidence. Anyway, Smartworks, brilliant charity. And we do a mega evening with them every year, sort of around early December, with loads of vintage pieces. And also brands getting rid of their surplus stock. And there are just incredible bargains. And it's a really good evening. I think it goes on for a whole weekend, actually. And also, we have to work on the Tills, the Telegraph team and the Smartworks team. So it's great because we get to meet readers and all sorts.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a reader to come, but it helps.
And also brands that you think do combine quality with financial accessibility.
Cos. But I don't know how green it is, but just does fantastic.
Yeah.
Just fantastic. Because I think the aesthetic is very sophisticated and they're bringing it in at a pretty decent price. I think. But also M&S. And every season I would go to the M&S showroom to do a preview. And my elder daughter said to me, oh, you're always saying it's good and then it's not good. Because they, in the showroom, we would see the samples and they look better. But this time, I've just seen the spring and summer collections written about it. And honestly, I think the what's in the store will be pretty, well, there'll be what I saw because it's summer. So they can use linens and cottons without breaking the bank. It's harder to bring wintry items in at a certain price because you end up having to use polyester, not wool. I hate all that stuff. But the summer collections are honestly, I think, definitely worth popping into store or going online. There's some really lovely pieces.
Brilliant.
And incredibly good prices.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you.
Unashamedly nosy question here, but who's been your favourite person to sit on the runway front row with?
My Telegraph colleagues. I don't know if you know how it works, but they'd sit the Brits together, the Americans together, cello, and it's like school because the Americans are always across the aisle from us, the catwalk rather. So we tend to just sit in the same places. And every so often you'll go to a brand and they have not got the memo and you might find yourself randomly amongst all the people from Taiwan and that's very disconcerting because you don't have anyone to talk to.
It's funny because I don't know how it works. I've got no idea. Is it a little bit like the Oscars where if someone gets up to go to the loo, they have like a seat filler, or is it not like that at all?
No, not at all. You can't go to the loo when you get into a show, very rarely. And you certainly, some of those shows are about 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
So no, go to the loo and you've missed it.
Do you feel that Kate Middleton gives a platform to British designers in the same way that Diana did? And do you feel that's part of what she should be doing?
I think she's been incredible for British fashion and British designers. And we all know the Kate effect. And I think it's real. It's not just newspaper hype. And actually, yes, I do. It's very interesting. A month or two ago, Buckingham Palace released this press release announcing that the Princess of Wales weren't going to tell journalists what designers or brands she was wearing in all, because they wanted everyone to focus on the work. And it seemed to many of us, and actually I was quite surprised the readers agreed, because they're very fierce defenders of Kate. Not that we were attacking Kate, but it's such a valuable platform. And I think at this point, I think two things. I think she's incredibly admired. So I don't think the fact that she says I'm wearing an Erdem dress or a Zara dress detracts from what, you know, the work that she's doing with children's charities or whatever. And I also think it's not too much to ask them to fly the flag for British design, because we're really good at it. And I also think this idea that the clothes you wear are trivial, they really are not. And if you think they're trivial and you regard them as trivial, if you truly regard them as trivial, you're really doing yourself a disservice, because we all make instant impressions. Whatever our attentions might be really honourable and just honour the beauty within, but biologically, we're all keyed up to make those first impressions on external appearances. And also, it's a huge industry, isn't it? It's like a 40 billion a year industry with lots of jobs dependent on it, the British fashion industry. So I think it's really, really valuable to have someone promoting it on an international stage.
You've interviewed everyone from Karl Lagerfeld to Donatella Versace, Victoria Beckham, Kate Blanchett. Who's your favourite interviewee been? And who would you love to interview? Who inspires you?
You always like the ones who say something mad or funny or thought-provoking. So Karl Lagerfeld was really good for that, and clever. Always absolutely loved interviewing Tom Ford, because he was quite unfiltered I mean, the last time I interviewed Tom was before the great era of cancellation. So they were all much freer in what they said. Now it's actually, frankly, it's no fun interviewing most people because they're all terrified of being cancelled. And who can blame them?
Do you still enjoy the party scene?
I never enjoyed the party scene. I'm not a party. When I was a teenager, God, I hated going to parties. I know it's so uncool. I don't like parties. I love having dinner, supper with people, whether it's a group of just three girlfriends or 20 people. I don't know. I think it's food, isn't it? Once you get people around food, it's just all so relaxed and fantastic. I hate parties.
How do you switch off?
The aforementioned walking.
Mm.
Love spending time in the countryside. I grew up in the countryside and I just really love it. And then love being around my family, when my daughters, when we all get together, is just so great. Family's starting to expand. My older daughter got married. And with friends. Every weekend getting together with friends is so nice.
Are you into any alternative or complementary therapies?
Oh, lordy, lordy, don't get me started.
Is that a yes or is that like
yes,
a
yes,
yes.
Oh, no, my gosh. Okay, I absolutely love sound baths. They do the trick for me. I think there's proper science there, isn't there, Sophie?
Yeah.
I find reflexology absolutely extraordinary. Acupuncture sometimes. It doesn't always work for me, but I'll go for it. Do you know, my very first job as a journalist was on Fitness magazine way back in the 80s. So I tried a lot of things then that are still around. Reiki, flotation tanks. Hate flotation tanks, actually. It's the one thing I do not like. Mm. But I'm totally up for an alternative. I mean, I just love it.
Who do you see for Reiki, out of interest?
Well, I don't go for Reiki anymore. I'm more into reflexology.
Yeah.
And there's a wonderful place on Westbourne Grove, where just near where I live, and I'll just nip in there and get it. It's incredible. It's called Reflections. Uh-huh. And it's absolutely brilliant. The people there are just really great. Highly recommend it. And I think there might be one or two other branches in London. Osteopathy is an alternative, is it? I totally swear by it. I know you can't get it on the NHS. Maybe it's considered alternative. Anyway, you know, and over the years, kinesiology to work out my allergies and intolerances. Yeah, I love it. I love it all.
So a few quick fire questions. Obviously, you travel a lot. Do you have any suitcase travel tips you can share with us? And also, do you have a favourite UK hotel and or spa?
I do. Okay, so travel tips. It's funny, I joke with my colleagues, my British colleagues with whom I'm sitting in the shows, that we get worse at packing the more we go. But I tell you what I swear by is these packing cubes, because first of all, you can get more in your suitcase. Also, when you're packing a lot, or if you're jet-lagged or whatever, it's so easy to leave things behind at the back of the cupboard where it's a little bit dark. And I actually now just leave things in those. I take the packing cases out of my case and just plop them on the shelves, and then put back things back in them. So that's really cut down on my very sad losses. What else? I am one of those awful people who take a lot of hand luggage in the overhead locker. I really max out on my allowance. Because also, sorry, I just saw an Instagram this morning on how various airlines in different countries treat your luggage. And it is horrifying.
Yeah.
Not putting my beautiful luggage through into the hold. No. So yeah, try and pack lightly. I mean, if I'm going to Paris, I usually go on Eurostar, so that's okay. I can take a bigger case. Favorite hotel, Pig on the Beach in Studland in Dorset. Absolutely love it. Mm. All the food comes from a 25-mile radius. A lot of it they grow themselves. They've got the balance right between being really good service, but not that thing where sometimes you go to a very posh restaurant in Paris and it's like silver domes and they're all doffing that. Oh my gosh, I can't bear it. Mm. And also it's overweening, but it's also inefficient quite a lot of the time. The Pig, they got it right. Having said that, they don't take dogs. So sadly, I haven't been for a couple of years. But they're brilliant. I love them.
Yeah, we go to the one, we're in Somerset and we go to the one down in Devon and love it. But the dog thing, so Watson has to stay in the car, which of course he moans about like anything. But anyway, can you recommend a book, a podcast and an Instagram account? Because we saw you posting on Insta about Nathan Hill's wellness, is it? So feel free to expand.
I absolutely loved wellness. It was my turn to suggest a book for my book group, and the literary editor of the Times had just emailed me about something. And I said, oh, by the way, Robbie, what book can I recommend? And he said, wellness. He said, I've recommended it to everybody. They all love it. My book group hated it. Aww. So I'm traumatized, but it's very, very good. I think it's 600 pages long. And it's about this couple in the US, and it's about the sort of 30-year marriage and the sort of ups and downs, but it's also about everything. It's about how algorithms have taken over our life. It's about people's faddiness with wellness. Mm-hmm. It's about gentrification. It's a snapshot of the last 30 years of a certain kind of middle class or as socially aspirational Western person. And so I found it really, really good. I'm obsessed with podcasts. I listen to them far too much, but I go in and out. And I've stopped listening to most of the political ones because they're so depressing. I love The Rest Is History. I love, she doesn't seem to be doing it anymore. She's maybe stopped 2 years ago, but there's one called You Must Remember This. There's tons of series of them. And she goes through cinema for the last sort of 70 years, and she'll take themes like eroticism in 90s thrillers or Dead Blondes. They're really fantastic. She's got quite a mannered voice, but I think she's brilliant. I hope she does some more. It's a fashion / clothes one called Articles of Interest, and it's really interesting. She do everything from why a ballet shoe became a ballet shoe to prison uniforms. And the sociology is very interesting. And there is one from the Telegraph called Fashion Unzipped, but it's very old. It's good. It was really good. I didn't host them. But the problem is we stopped doing them and they're a little bit old now.
Okay, yeah. Do you listen to The Rest Is Entertainment? Because Marina Hyde.
Oh, my goodness. Genius on that. I've only just started listening to it. I was a little bit resistant because I don't know. I thought it might be a bit flippant, but it's brilliant, isn't it?
Oh, just absolutely amazing. Can't wait for them to come out. I mean, her knowledge is just
their knowledge to combine, because sort of Richard Osman has worked in the TV industry and she and Marina Hyde from The Guardian just really seems to know an awful lot. I find it very instructive, actually.
Yeah, I think it's heavily researched, but at the same time, I know they've got a team behind them, but it's an amazing podcast.
Really yes.
Good. And an Instagram account as well. Who's like, can you recommend some?
Well, again, I sort of have a love-hate relationship with Instagram, because what I find is I sort of like some dog ones, and then I'm absolutely, so all I get is dog ones or whatever. And I love them. But my gosh, I go into my Instagram account to see if somebody's direct messaged me, because people insist on contacting you that way, and then I forget to look at the messages because I'm waylaid by dog videos or what, plastic surgery and people who've had it and people who swear they haven't had all that sort of stuff. But this is one that I like at the moment very, very much, is Arthur Parkinson, right, who is a gardener, and he does a lot of gardening in pots, and they're beautiful. But also the other day he just posted a video of a robin that was hopping in and out of his house, I think. And it was just, it's just so lovely.
Calm.
It's like, if you can't go on a walk, then look at an Arthur Parkinson video on Instagram.
Yeah. Love that your algorithm is serving up loads of dogs, though. It sounds like mine.
I love the dogs, but I've got to get away. I've got to have a bit of a break from the dogs.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
This is from my mum, who never gave out much advice, but she, when my children were little, and there's always a moment with children where they might become very fussy eaters or not. And we were really determined they were not going to be fussy eaters. And my mother said to me, look, give them a choice, but make the choice incredibly limited. So it would be like, well, would you like broccoli with your spaghetti? Or would you like green beans with your spaghetti? Or would you like it on the blue plate or the yellow plate? So they think they're getting choice, but you are the controller. And it honestly, well, with my girls anyway, it worked like an absolute charm. That was a fantastic piece of advice. And I've shared it with lots of parents over the years, rather ridiculously, because by no means am I an expert on parenting. But everyone seems to get good results.
Love it. Love it. Thank you.
Probably works with adults as well, come to think of
it. Yeah, just make people think like you're giving them choices, whereas in fact you're leading them down to...
Would you like to read Wellness on a Kindle or on a book?
Exactly. What would people never guess about you?
That I seething mass of emotions underneath. Because I think, I don't know, somebody said something to me the other day and I thought, oh my gosh, people think I'm really quite calm and serene, and I'm not. And also, I go absolutely bananas when I see animal cruelty. That's another thing that gets served up, alas, on my Instagram algorithm. I just can't compute. So I'm not particularly serene all the time. And animals, a bit obsessed with animals.
Besides your storied career as a writer and journalist, you're a three-time winner of the British Press Awards for Fashion Journalist of the Year, winner of the British Fashion Awards Best Fashion Journalist, and in 2022, you were awarded an OBE for services to fashion. Oh, and you have an honorary doctorate from the University of Arts in London. What out of that amazing list of accolades are you most proud of? Or other things as well. And so far, because it's not over yet, is there anything you wish you'd done differently?
The wish I'd done differently. I'm minded to say that I wish I'd been more confident in my 30s and 40s, especially when I went to work, when I left Vogue. I think I can't remember, it's about 37. And I went to work on a newspaper and I just always thought, oh, they know better. They know better. These people who were maybe not working in fashion. And you know what? They really didn't a lot of the time. And I think it's striking that balance between not being too cocky, but also really trusting your experience and your expertise. But then on the other hand, my sort of insecurities made me such a striver, and I've never ever been complacent. So would I have had the career I had without the sort of massive nagging neurotic insecurity? I don't know. I might have been a bit more relaxed at weekends. Really it boils down to aging, because I often think, oh, wouldn't it be great to be 40 again, but to know what I know now.
Thank you so much for joining us, Lisa. What a wonderful chat. And for anyone listening, you can follow Lisa over on Instagram at Miss Lisa Armstrong.
Thank you, Sophie. That was really fun.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com, and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.